Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, October 6th, 2012. This is Tech Guy number 915. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile from Citrix. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile. Try it today free for 30 days. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the new iPhone at Gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TECH. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk tech. That means computers, sure, internet, yeah. But more nowadays, really where the cutting edge of technology is happening is in mobile, is in portable devices. So cell phones, tablets, all of that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. Oh, home theater too. Yeah, sure, we'll talk about that. In fact, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, comes up in about 30 minutes, 33 after the hour. So lots of stuff to talk about when it comes to technology. This is I could be covering anything. You know, I started in radio as a generalist, and I did a gardening show, I did a home improvement show, I did food and wine, and all of that stuff's great and fun and interesting. And I even did, you know, like news talk and politics and all that stuff. But the thing about covering technology that's so great is no one dies. No one bleeds. No, it's not life or death. And yet it is important, right? Because this stuff is not just, these aren't just toys. I mean, it's kind of like the toy store meets the real world, because they are toys. They're really cool. They're really fun. You know, there's always new stuff to talk about, always new inventions. Some of the most creative, innovative people in the country, in the world, are working on technology. You know, that's the place to be. So it's always very interesting. But it's not just toys, because really this stuff is important too. It's changing everything about our lives. It's doing it slowly enough so that some of us may not notice. But all you have to do is remember, you know, when's the last time you went inside a bank instead of the ATM machine? That's a computer. You know, when do you actually, when's the last time you dialed a phone? We still call it dialing, don't we? But I notice I don't even make phone calls much anymore. I was talking about this last night with Jean from Smile Software. Actually, we were talking about how things have changed. She's not as old as I am, but she's an adult, and she says, "Yeah, when I was a teenager, as a girl, we'd go home and I'd get on the phone, the corded phone, and I'd be on it for hours talking to my friends. That's what teenage girls did. Remember the? I said, "Did you have a princess phone?" She said, "No, I never. I wasn't that fancy." But you remember Bye Bye Birdie, that great old movie about Conrad Birdie, who was kind of an Elvis? And there's even a whole scene with Anne Margaret and her girlfriends talking to each other, you know, on the bed with their legs up and flapping, and they're on the phone just for hours. That's what teenagers did, girls mostly. I don't know what the boys did. We still don't talk much. We grunt. See the game? Yeah. But girls, they find something to talk about for hours on end. Then I think about my daughter, who's 20 now, but as she was growing up, of course, when she was really little, I think she spent time on the phone when she was 11 or 12. But by the time she was in junior high school, she was instant messenger. It was chatting. And I remember watching her do homework with music on iTunes playing, instant messenger running and her homework on the screen and probably the TV in the background, too. And all of this going on at once. And she's having a conversation while she's doing her homework on the IM. That was how they did it. And BlackBerry Messenger, you know, I think people don't maybe remember this, but BlackBerries were huge in high schools because all the high school kids, that's how they communicated, BlackBerry Messenger. Now, that's not done anymore. It's text messaging, isn't it? It's SMS. That's how people communicate. Even grown-ups. I was talking with my good friend Lisa this morning. She said, does the new iPhone have trouble with text messages? I said, why? She said, for the first time in my life, a text message didn't go through. Nobody got it. And I'm wondering, have you noticed this? Is text messaging getting less reliable as we use it more and more? I remember very well. It wasn't so long ago. I've been doing the show a long time, almost more than 20 years now. And I remember maybe it was 10 years ago, talking about, hey, you know, the rest of the world uses text messaging like crazy. We don't hear so much in the U.S. Because do you remember that text messaging in the U.S., you couldn't message, if you were Verizon, you couldn't message AT&T? Or Sprint, you know, you had to only text message people on your carrier. It was very complicated. You had to do a kind of an email address to text message somebody on a different service. And then they figure that out. And now text messaging is very straightforward. All you need is a phone number and it goes through and it's almost instantaneous. And I can remember seeing things like in Great Britain. Text messaging was so huge a few years ago. We hadn't caught on here in the States so much. It was so huge that TV shows would say, text us your, you know. It was before American Idol. People were texting votes and things like that. I think there were two things holding text messaging back in the U.S. One was, of course, that you couldn't cross message across services. But the other was that we had phones that you had a number pad and you had to type, you know, C was typing the number 1 3 times. Then the iPhone and the BlackBerry phones. BlackBerry started it, but iPhone in 2007. And I think that's when text messaging took off. When you had an actual keyboard, you could type a message. And now with Siri, I don't even type anymore. I dictate on both Android and iPhone. I dictate all my messages, which means sometimes people get very strange messages from me. I actually have a new policy. I don't fix autocorrect because I think it's humorous. And I think people know now. People know now that if you get something very bizarre, that it's autocorrect that fixed it. And it's kind of fun to try to figure it out. But I do think we've seen the end of SMS. Believe it or not, I think we're already ready to move on. So what are the kids doing today? What's the next big thing? That's my question to you today. Yeah, there's a wonderful strength in our chat room. And I'll tell you how to get in the chat room in a second. It's saying there's a wonderful blog called... I probably shouldn't say the name. Darn You Autocorrect, except it's not darn. DarnYouAutocorrect.com, and it's hysterical. In fact, some of it's a little profane, a little adult, but if you can read this without starting to laugh uncontrollably and having tears run down your eyes, you're inhuman. It may be the funniest. What autocorrect cracks me up. It's just me. So what's next? Cursive letter writing on stationery, says Truckee. You know, you laugh, but I actually got cards printed, you know, really heavy stock with my name on it. And I do handwrite because it's so unusual when you get a note, handwritten note. It's like, wow, this person really cares. They actually used their hand and a pen. If I could show them I was using a quill pen, I would do that. They would really take it seriously. What's next? What's next? 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. You can ask or call and talk. That number is a toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., it's 888-827-5536. Put a +1 in front of it and use Skype or something like that. It'll be free because it is a toll-free number. 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to join the chat room, I love the chat room, and it's a great way to kind of talk back and to talk with other people who are listening to the show at the same time as you are. You just go to our website, techguylabs.com, and there'll be instructions there on how to get into the chat room. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the website. Show notes are there as well. You know, I just moved, and it's funny because I'm getting cable service. I'm not getting phone service. Because I'm going to use Skype I use something called Obi-Hi, which uses Google Voice. I don't need a landline phone. I do not need to call AT&T and get a landline phone. And it's driving the cable guy crazy. I got literally from Comcast 5 calls now saying, you know, we can give you a really good deal on a landline. Triple play package. I don't want a landline. No, but I mean, really, it won't cost you anything for the first thing. No, I don't want a landline. Do you get, I mean, seriously, who needs a landline anymore? Do you really need one? Maybe for 911. If I have a heart attack, I'm in deep trouble. But other than that, I'm fine. I just have to stay healthy. 8888 Ask Leah. What's next? What's replacing SMS? Give me a call. Let's talk tech right after this break. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
I read what she wrote. Do you love me? Do you want?
Oh yeah, love notes have to be handwritten. That's what it's for. You have to handwrite love notes. If you type a love note, it's not very. So good. It's good, Kenner. You're learning. Kenner's in eighth grade. He's learning cursive, and I was wondering why. Now I realize why. So you can write a love note. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We're talking high tech and whether you need to have a phone. What's wrong with SMS? What's going to replace SMS? Stuff like that. Do you still need to learn handwriting? I was pointing out I got a lovely handwritten note, and I would write you back, but I don't know how to write. From one R. Wright of Redondo Beach, who sent me, I guess R. Wright is in the IEEE, sent me an article from the IEEE Spectrum, which is the journal of the Electronic Engineering Enterprise, IEEE, I don't even know what it stands for. It's the Engineering Society, about disposable electronics. But the reason it caught my eye is because he or she handwrote a note to me. Clearly with a fountain pen, beautiful handwriting, which I have to say dates you. I know this is not a 25-year-old. You know, this is somebody who learned cursive. Palmer method. Jason Tech says, well, you don't need to know how to handwrite. People are proposing marriage over Twitter. You're right. You're right. Just tweet your love notes. Then it's very romantic. Let's get to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Thank you. John just handed me my coffee, so I am ready to answer your calls now. I was waiting for that. I was stalling. But now this will course through my veins and my brain will start to work. Bobby, San Bernardino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Bobby.
Hey, a quick question. I just purchased a Lifetime antivirus Trend Micro, and I've seen another advertisement this morning before I called you about Viper and these Lifetime antivirus
upgrades. I like Trend. I'm not crazy about Viper. But it's interesting they're offering Lifetime. You know why they're doing that? Because it's almost over for them. And so they want to get as much money out of you as they can. Because in Windows 8, Microsoft ships Windows 8 with an antivirus built in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Trend Micro and Viper, basically, that's one of the reasons they do that, why they do that?
Yeah, I don't know whose Lifetime they're talking about, but it ain't yours, Bobby.
No.
Maybe
kidding.
The Lifetime of Windows 7. Yeah, that's why. But how much was a Lifetime subscription?
It was, for three computers, it was like $89.95.
That's not a bad deal. That's not a bad deal. I mean, it's not like it was $500. Then I'd say, please don't do that. But $89, you're going to, three computers, you'll have that protection for a couple of years. You're not going to move all your computers to Windows 8 tomorrow.
Right.
In fact, I would guess, we shall see. Windows 8 comes out October 26th in 20 days. We shall see, but I suspect that there will be slow adoption of Windows 8. So all those Windows 7 folks still need an antivirus, so you're going to get at least a couple of years on three computers. That's a good deal.
Oh, that's another quick question. I just ordered an HP laptop here the other day. I haven't gotten it yet. It's Windows 7. Are you going to be able to upgrade to Windows 8?
Yes.
When you get that laptop?
Yeah, generally speaking, and they do this every time a new version of Windows is available. The machines that are sold in the last few months before a new version of Windows comes out, they have an inexpensive upgrade. Most OEM machines now, most machines that are sold with Windows 7 in the last month or two, I think it's a $15 upgrade to Windows 8.
But you're saying with Windows 8, you won't need an antivirus?
Well, I don't know. It comes with an antivirus. Historically, Microsoft's antiviruses have not been as good as the third party antiviruses. And I suspect what will happen is that the look at companies like Trend and ESET and McAfee and Norton aren't going to go away. They're not going to just throw up their hands and say, okay, let's find a new business.
Right.
So they'll find a way to add value to whatever Microsoft does. But yes, I think that the reason you're going to see these lifetime subscriptions is they're trying. They figure this may be the last time for most people that they buy an antivirus. So let's get as much money out of them as we possibly can now.
Got you. All right, Leo, thank you. I'll listen to you every weekend, and I appreciate your help.
I know you do, Bobby. It's great to talk to you. Thank you so much. Really, I appreciate it. And it's a really good question. Because what happens to these companies when, Microsoft doesn't want to put companies out of business, especially companies that make Windows software. So they always are slow to do this kind of thing, but they've been intimating this for a while. You know, they started shipping Defender and then with NA spyware stuff, and then they bought Giant, which was a mediocre antivirus company, but they started to build their own antivirus using that. Now, and they offer for free security essentials, but they... So they're slowly moving it, but they still held off on putting it in Windows, right? So that we could still buy a third party, or we could get the Microsoft product. With Windows 8, it comes with an antivirus. And so that means 99% of the people who get a new Windows 8 machine will never consider buying another antivirus. So those of these companies have to figure out something. And you'll see, I suspect, they'll find a value add, something to say like, you know, well, you have Microsoft's antivirus, but does it do this, this, and this? And this is intentional on Microsoft's part that they slowly add features. They really can't afford to annoy developers. Windows 8, as I mentioned, comes out. I got the invitation. There's an event, New York City, on the 25th of October. That's for the press. They're building pop-up stores, 32 of them all over the country. These Microsoft stores will open the 26th, the next day, and they will not only have Windows 8 for sale there, and I don't know, it's unknown. I don't think that you'll be able to buy a box of Windows 8. That's kind of old. That's old fat. That's as bad as buying, you know, remember there was a point at which, I can't remember if it was Windows 98, where you could still buy it on floppies, and it was like 32 floppies. And we've come a long way, baby. And I think now that the most people will install from the internet as opposed to from a DVD. So the stores are mostly going to be showing, and there's a lot of interest in this, Microsoft's Surface tablet. Windows RT is their tablet operating system. And that'll be the first we'll have been able to touch these things. And they'll also show, I'm sure, Windows 8 computers from a variety of other manufacturers. Microsoft's own Windows 8 computer isn't going to be available for 3 more months, oddly enough. It's also called Surface. So there's a Surface RT, which is the tablet, you know, kind of like an iPad, a limited tablet. And then there's Windows 8 Pro Surface versions, and that actually is a full Windows 8 operating system. That, I think, is an interesting product. But everybody, Lenovo, Dell, HP, all of the big Microsoft Windows companies, you know, companies that make PCs, will be making Windows 8 PCs. Not all of them tablets, however, but many of them. That happens soon, and I'll certainly I'll get in line at the Windows pop-up store and pick me up a tablet. Paul in Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hi. My wife bought me an iMac for my birthday yesterday.
She must love you a lot.
I know. I was shocked.
Hang on, because I got to take a break. I hear the magic music, but I'll tell you what. I will help you with your brand new Honey, I Love You iMac right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, da, da, da. You know what I would like to talk about briefly right now is something called ShareFile. I use ShareFile. In fact, I ran out of the door yesterday after I recorded commercial. Let's make sure. Yes, ShareFile did all the syncing. Of course it did. This is ShareFile is a way to share files for businesses. So what I do, I use it every day to share commercials, radio commercials with the radio stations. But businesses use it for sharing presentations, drawings. Anytime you have a large file, you probably don't want to email it for a couple of reasons. One, you don't know if it'll bounce back. A lot of email systems won't accept files beyond a certain size. Sometimes it's as low as 10 megabytes. That used to be a lot. There are still people whose entire inbox cannot exceed 10 megabytes. So emailing's a bad idea for that reason and for reasons of privacy and security, because email's like sending a postcard. Every server along the way can read it. It's not protected. So people do send attachments. And it's also, the third reason is, you heard me say it, don't open attachments. Attachments is the way viruses get spread. So don't send attachments in business. But now people always say, well, don't, what should I do? Now I have an answer. Share file. It is very simple. In fact, if you use Outlook, you can send it as if you're sending an attachment, but you're not. You're sharing the file through the Share File service, which adds some great features. Encrypted, private, you completely control it. You can actually, in fact, let me show you. I'm going to log into my Share File account. You see, this is nice too. It's branded, right? So, you know, when the people get the Share File link and they click it, they're going to get your logo and all of that. So you have an address book. So that you, you know, if you send files to people all the time, and you see, I have permissions on these address books. So, so when I send something to Doc Bailey at KFI, he cannot delete it. And Doc knows why he can't delete it. I was using another consumer service to do this, and he would delete the files when he was done with them. Doc, you can't delete them because it deleted it for everybody, not with Share File. Share File is so much more straightforward. So let's say I want to send a folder. I click. Now, I can just do this in Outlook, but I'll show you without Outlook. I could send an email this way, but I'll show you. You can also get a link, and you get some settings too. Email me when the item's been downloaded. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. That way you can see who downloaded it when. You don't have to do these, but if you want, these are all available. You can expire the download after never or after a year, 6 months. So that's good. So you're going to say, I'm going to send you a commercial, but I want you to use it after a week. I want to know who downloaded it. I want you to email me. And you can download it 1, 2, 3, 10, or unlimited times. I'll let them download it many times. Now I send the file. Now look at this. I get a link. Now this link, you don't have to sign up for a Share File account. I'll paste it in. This is what they get when they see the link. They get a branded page. My logo, a download link. They're you know, very straightforward. I can click the download button. This will download the whole file, the whole thing. In fact, maybe I shouldn't do this. Now, it will also, if I asked for email, This is just slick. This is the way to do it if you're sharing files in business. It looks like you know what you're doing. It's secure. It's HIPAA compliant, compliant with a lot of government regulations. So they have Share File for a lot of different industries. Architects use it a lot, I know. Medical professionals, because of HIPAA, need that. Millions of professionals rely on ShareFile every day. It's from Citrix, that's why. It's also, I think, almost every Fortune 500 company, with rare exception, uses ShareFile. So if you're interested in this, I've got a 30-day trial for you, and I highly recommend you try before you buy, always. That's why we get all of our sponsors to do this. ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and use my name, Tech Guy. ShareFile.com, radio microphone, and use my name, Tech Guy. And they hide that. So that's actually, it's good to point this out. It's right at the top of the page, radio listeners, click here. That's the same for podcasts too. And then look at all the industries. They have customization for all of these industries. It's really fantastic. ShareFile.com, just make sure you use my offer code, Tech Guy, would you? I use it every single week with the radio stations. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're going back to our caller. Then we'll get Scott Wilkinson on, our home theater guy. But I think this is so sweet. Paul in Rancho Cucamonga, his wife, for his birthday, bought him a new iMac. Are you happy?
Yes, I was so happy. Yes, Leo, but here's the thing, and my wife won't be offended. I checked the Mac Rumors buying guide, and they are saying that updates to the Apple's iMac line is reportedly imminent. This is reported September 7th.
Wait a minute. That was a month ago.
Yes.
Wonder what the definition of imminent is.
Yeah, that sounds like it's probably between now and Black Friday. They're going to release new iMac.
No. No one knows this. No one knows this. This is a not even a rumor. You know what they base this on? It's due.
Right. Yeah. It looks, according to the timeline, most of the iMacs get released between about 265 to about 300 days, and it's been 522 days since the last release.
It's overdue.
Yes.
That's what they're basing it on, period.
Right.
I don't know if that it could happen tomorrow and it could happen next year.
Oh, really? Wow. So and that's the thing. Should I return it, get store credit, maybe wait it out a month and see, or just be happy with what I have? What do you think?
So what will a new iMac have that the old iMac does not? The only thing I think that it would have is this new Ivy Bridge processor. The current iMacs have Sandy Bridge. And this is another reason why they said it. Intel has released this Ivy Bridge platform system on a chip months ago. And Apple, which normally responds very quickly. See, something's happening at Apple that's a little disturbing, which is they make so much money now on iOS, on iPhones and iPads, that they aren't paying much attention to the desktops. It doesn't mean the desktops aren't good. In fact, it's all I buy. But it does mean that they are not updating them as quickly as they used to. That's why that 256 days or the 512 days, that's meaningless now because Apple just doesn't update them.
Possibility of Retina, too.
No. Okay, I could tell you this right now. There will not be Retina, and then for a simple reason. These iMac screens at 21 and 27. Did she get you a 21 or a 27-inch?
27-inch.
You have a very nice wife. So you will not see a 27-inch Retina display for a simple reason. There's too many pixels. It cannot. The hardware. I have a Retina MacBook Pro, the first Retina Mac that they've made. And even it gets sluggish with its very high-end processor and GPU gets sluggish. And it's much smaller. That's a 15-inch screen. So if you're pushing too many pixels for the current state of the art, it would either be very, 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 very expensive or it would just be sluggish. And so I wouldn't – if you want a 27-inch, don't worry about Retina. You got 2560 by 1440. You got a lot of pixels.
I mean, yeah, it's already great. I was just – checking with you before I made that decision.
So the biggest difference it would probably have USB 3 because Ivy Bridge gives you that for free.
Okay.
It would probably have a better graphics processor, although the Radeon that's in the iMac ain't bad. Are you going to game on it?
My kids, I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. They are total fans of Minecraft. We even watch
Minecraft is not challenging. Isn't it interesting how much kids love Minecraft? I can't figure that out.
Yeah, we watched the OMG Craft from one of your...
Oh, Chad Johnson's OMG Craft show. You watch that?
Yes, my kids love it. It's like, they don't watch that much TV. I mean, I guess they're these new, millennials. All they want to do is read and game. That's
I love it. Them. I love them. They want to read and game. What the heck's wrong with that? Oh, they're not watching The X Factor. Those poor little kids are missing out. That's great. They're not watching Phineas and Ferb. Oh, no, I think that's great. So, but Minecraft's not challenging. It's more what would be challenging is if they want to play Skyrim or some high-end 3D game. And I think that this is plenty of processor for that.
Yeah.
You're going to lose probably the FireWire port. Apple's no longer making those. That's a reason against waiting. A lot of people like that FireWire port. And you'll get USB 3 instead. That's the biggest change. It's a little bit faster. You will not get Retina. I can promise you that.
Okay.
I love my I have an older iMac and I love it. It's not out of date. You know, here's the good news. If Apple comes out with something in the next month, you'll be able to bring it back to the Apple store and say, "Hey, I just bought this," and they'll trade it.
They did say I had a 15-day grace period and then a one-time-only 30-day grace period.
So you got a month. If Apple's going to release a new iMac, let's see, it's October 6th. If they want to get it out for Christmas, they're definitely going to do it in the next 30 days.
I think
you're okay. I wouldn't rush to trade it in.
I think I'll stick with it. I mean, I have the iPhone 4S. I'm happy with that maybe for another year, even maybe another 2 years. So,
And I suspect if they do new iMacs, it won't be till January.
Right.
They typically do new hardware in January, February.
Excellent.
Don't worry about it, Paul. Enjoy that nice iMac. Your wife is a sweetheart.
I know. I love her.
That is a 27-inch iMac. That's a great family thing to have, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have some video still on eight millimeter analog tape, and we really need to encode that.
How old are the kids?
They're 8 and 10 years old.
Okay. Yeah, because mine, I have a ton of high eight. I've got to convert. All of the early baby stuff is on high eight, and which is an analog format. I got to convert it.
And I know I've been listening to you, and I know I need to get that done like ASAP.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Paul, it's great to hear from you. I will tell Chad that your kids love OMG Craft.
Yes.
That's our Minecraft show on the Twit Network. You know, I have to – Chad puts that out on his website because he said, I don't want it to be one of yours. I want it to be my own thing. And I said, Chad, you do whatever you want because you're the greatest. You could search for OMG Craft and you'll find it on Reddit. He has a whole page devoted to it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Twit. I'm a geek dad. I'm trying to raise my boys in kind of the maker movement that's kind of going on.
Rock
right
on!
Now.
I love it. Paul, we're working on some shows for you. I really think that this is the new thing, is exactly what you just described. A geek dad with children 8 to 15 and who don't want them to be just consumers of technology, who want them to understand it and use it and create it. And I want to make a whole channel of shows just for those people because I think that absolutely needs to be done.
I love it. Yeah, I watch Know How consistently. I mean, one of the things we're going to do, our old computer is a homebrew, and we're going to tear it down. I'm going to tear it down to pieces, and I'm going to say, okay, kids, you're going to put it back together. And Puppy Linux or whatever. Maybe Media Center.
Paul, you're a good dad. Wow, that is so great. Do you read the Geek Dad column on Wired?
Yes, I know there's a book. I've perused through it a couple times. But, yeah, there's like a book I have on my iPhone. I got to check it out. But, yeah, I'm definitely trying to go along. I took them to Maker Faire. They now have these little mini satellite Maker Faires, and we had one in Irvine not too long ago. And I took them to that, and it inspired me. You know, they had three-dimensional printers and guys dressed up as steampunk style. So, yeah, I'm totally all into this.
That's one of the things I love about going to these maker events is it's a lot of kids who really get it and they want to participate. Paul, nice to talk to you.
Yeah,
enjoy your new iMac. All righty. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Isn't that exciting? I just think that's so cool. Scott Wilkinson is here, and he's our home theater guy. I guess people aren't building their own TVs.
Well, no.
We'll talk in a minute about home theater with Scott Wilkinson. He is the home theater geek on the Twit Network. And answer some of your questions, too. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Building a rocket or fighting a mummy, you're climbing up the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah!
Discovering something that doesn't exist.
Hey!
Or giving a monkey a shower.
I wish I were a kid these days. Actually, you know, I have mixed feelings. On the one hand, the world is your oyster. I mean, you can go to Khan Academy and or Coursera.com and get college-level courses in any subject. You can learn anything you want. My son, who's 18, just turned 18, is a high school senior, and just for some reason just now got interested in education. Oh, that's good. So, oh, good timing, kid. So, but he's now very interested in it, and so he's using these online sites. And I told him, you know, in some ways, directing your own education is better because you just go what you're interested in, right? School, the problem with school is it marches you lockstep through stuff. And I kind of like the idea of a kid saying, I'm really interested in this, and then studying it until he's bored with it. Or it moves him to a second subject, and his third subject, and fourth subject. But you can't do that in school for obvious reasons. So I told Henry, this is an opportunity to do that. So it's a good time to be a kid, but then it's also a bad time to be a kid because too many choices sometimes is terrifying. So I don't know which way I go on that. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's a big kid. He's our home theater guy.
I am a big kid.
He gets to play with all these cool toys like giant screens and surround sound and all this. We were talking off the air about my new home theater. It just seems like I just bought a home theater setup. I know I did. But I have to have two now because I have one upstairs and one downstairs. You wouldn't want to be, more than 15 steps away from a television at any time.
That's right. Or certainly not have one on the opposite in the next floor. You'd have to climb some stairs.
I'd have to go upstairs to watch TV. Never.
Forget it.
Forget about it. So, but no TV in the bedroom. I don't think that I stop. I draw the line somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We drew the line in the front living room. There's no TV in there.
Okay. So you always have to have somewhere.
Right, a TV-free zone.
TV-free zone. As long as it's not more than 15 steps away from the TV, it's okay.
Exactly, exactly. Or else you start breaking out in a sweat and trembling.
Hate it when that happens. We're joking, but it's kind of true, unfortunately. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater geek. He does a podcast every Monday on our Twit Network, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, called Home Theater Geeks. You can find out more at Twit, T-W-I-T. .tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks.
And this week is very interesting. On Monday, the guest is Noel Lee, the founder of Monster Cable.
Oh, are you going to... Now, okay. So how challenging are you going to be with Noel?
Well, I'm going to be a little challenging. I'm not going to be super confrontational. I don't want to get into a fist fight over the...
No, we don't do that.
I don't do that. I want to give him...
And Monster, when it was analog cables, made a lot of sense. Big, thick gauge cables, gold-plated, that kind of thing. But in the digital world, they're still selling highly expensive cables, and there's some question about whether they really need to.
Well, I certainly am going to ask him about that, and what factors does he believe contribute to a better performance out of a cable. Now, I will have to say that Monster has a reputation for selling expensive cables, and they're certainly more expensive than, like, Monoprice or something like that. But they're nowhere near as expensive as the most expensive cables on the market. So they're somewhere in the middle. And I'm going to ask him about, you know, the price to performance ratio. And what does that curve look like? Where does it flatten out? You know, so that if you spend $100 on a cable versus $1,000,
right,
you know, how much improvement is that really going to get you?
Especially in digital. I don't deny that it makes a big difference in analog, and that's where they made their name. And I bought Monster cables.
Yeah.
And I think if you're buying analog cables, a well-made cable makes a big, big difference.
Yes.
But I don't know for HDMI. Now, I'm looking, and actually Monster cables are not, you're right, they're not, they sell their HDMI THX-1000 HDX Ultimate High Speed HDMI THX Certified 8-Foot Cable for $45, and you could spend $1,000.
Easily.
But you could also spend $9.
So, true.
The question is a $45 THX certified HDMI cable better in any way than an $8 uncertified cable?
Well, I'm going to ask him that question.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll say, yes, it is, and here's why. So
I just like to see the test results. But the problem with all of this is it's very hard to show. That's why we have golden ears.
And golden eyes.
And it's why I buy my cables at monoprice.com, because they're cheap and I'm a cheapskate. But, you know, I spent a lot of money on everything else, so maybe I'm being foolish.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting question and not a really necessarily obvious one.
No.
I generally recommend, you know, you don't need to spend hundreds of dollars on cables.
The only research I've seen is that when HDMI gets more than, say, 10 feet,
yes,
it might behoove you to buy a better cable.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's certainly what I recommend. So I'm going to ask him. One of the things I'm going to ask him about, Monster has just released a new HDMI cable that's powered. It actually has some circuitry in it that lets you extend it much farther than the typical HDMI limit. Plus, it has a little indicator that shows you whether you're watching standard def or high def. Because sometimes a lot of people buy a high def TV, they bring it home, they set it up, they put some signal into it, and they go, well, that doesn't look very good. Well, it's because they're watching standard def, but they don't know it.
So it'd be nice to know, right?
Exactly. And this little cable has a little tiny LED that'll show you whether or not you're watching high def or standard def.
See, I like that. That's kind of what I was saying about the antivirus companies. In a world where Microsoft gives you an antivirus, you got to go the extra mile and add something. In a world where cables can be bought at $9 at mono price, if you're going to charge $50 for a cable, you better put something in there that makes it unique and better. And that sounds like that's a good choice. That sounds like a good way to do it. Yeah.
I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
You got a question from a listener?
I do. I have one from Australia, where you are going to be next month.
And you are going to be filling in for me next month.
I am. I'm looking forward to that tremendously.
Is that the 14th and 15th?
17th and 18th of November.
Okay.
I will be in the studio and trying to fill your shoes.
Well, no, I really appreciate you doing that because it's nice to be able to take a little vacation once in a while.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it's wonderful for me always to be able to.
So save it, don't save them, but if you've got home theater questions and you want Scott's attention, and we're going to do two whole shows devoted to home theater on the 17th and 18th of next month. That'll be fun.
It's going to be great. Anyway, here's Dave Hatch from Australia, who wants one unit to stream Netflix type stuff, record local over-the-air television on a hard disk, like a DVR, and act as a media streamer for the entire house, and possibly be able to burn DVDs from the recorded content. And he says, I'm imagining you're going to say, get a Media Center PC. Well, yes, I am. That's what I'm going to say. that's the only device I know that'll do all of that in one device. But he doesn't want that. He wants a standalone system, and I don't know of any single product that'll do it. But I did recently learn about a pretty cool thing called Simple.TV. In fact, I learned about this on Framerate last Monday. I was a guest on Framerate, the podcast about movies and TV and stuff. And I first heard about this Simple TV, which is an over-the-air DVR that interfaces with your Roku box. So it lets you stream stuff from the live TV through the Roku to your TV, or you can stream to your iPad or a laptop.
I want this. I've never heard of this.
I hadn't either. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Now,
Simple.TV.
Right. That's the URL and the name of the product.
We brought their site. Oh, it's not cheap.
It's $200, but that includes a year of their what they call their premier service, which gives you a few features that without paying that you don't get. For example, an electronic program guide, the ability to record an entire series. So, for example, if you, like me, enjoy Once Upon a Time, which just started up season two, you can set it to record the entire season. Without this service, you'd have to record each one individually, each episode. And you can also do remote streaming, sort of like Slingbox. So that's what $49 a year will get you, and the $200 cost of the box gets that service for you for the first year.
I am very, very tempted. What it does is it solves a problem for cord cutters. There's a whole bunch of people who have good antennas, and they can receive good, very high-quality HD signals via antenna, so they don't want to pay for it.
And most major markets have lots of choices in that regard.
Right. So they want to pay for cable, but they need a DVR.
Right,
they need a TV, a program guide, things like that.
Oh, and the other thing to remember about this is that you supply your own hard disk for the DVR.
Oh, so it has a USB port you just plug in?
Correct.
Oh, so that means you can have any size you want, too, which is nice.
Correct.
I like it.
And since hard disks are cheap these days, I mean, that is another $100 or so onto the cost of this thing. So you got $200 for that thing. You got $100 for a Roku if you don't already have one. You've got, say, $100 roughly for a hard disk drive. You're in the $400 range.
This is basically a TiVo, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, he's going to be on Home Theater Geeks on Monday with Mr. Monster, 1 p.m. Pacific, twit.tv/HTG. Thanks, Scott.
Bet.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, my. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number to call if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you want to give us a movie review, you could do that, too. Geek movies abound. You know, I just saw Looper. Good movie. I like time travel movies. Fun. And I'm very interested in Cloud Atlas. Looks pretty good, doesn't it? That's coming out soon. I'm trying to read the book quickly. Actually, I'm listening. I'm doing the audiobook as quickly as I can so that because I hate seeing a movie and it spoils the book. I'd rather read the book and spoil the movie. I don't know why. It's just how I do it. 8888 Ask Leah. Also tomorrow, the first civilian space cargo launch. SpaceX will be launching a cargo mission to the International Space Station. And that's exciting. We're actually going to cover that tomorrow evening on our Twit Network. See, one of the things about having your own internet, I guess for want of a better word, internet television network and studio, is you can do whatever you want. If it's geeky, we cover it. And so we can cover like the SpaceX launch in a way that, you know, normal broadcast just doesn't, because it's, you know, people are kind of interested in it. Well, we're really interested in it. Denise, Santa Clarita, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey, give a big cheer for Steve Jobs a year ago.
Thank you. Yeah, October 5th, 2011, Steve Jobs passed away almost exactly a year ago yesterday. I'm so glad you brought that up. I forgot to mention it. You know, certainly it was a sad day for all of us, and we actually spent on our network, again, this is something where we could do 5 or 6 hours about it, and it was really moving. You get anecdotes and stories. And, you know, now that he's been gone a year, I think we really in some ways see what he brought to the excitement he brought to the industry and the joy and, yeah, the passion. And sometimes he could be really obnoxious to some of his employees and others. I've received both the nice Steve. I've been at the butt end of both the nice Steve and the angry Steve, and I prefer the nice Steve. But what you can't deny is that passion was good for the industry and brought some amazing products to fruit. So thank you for reminding me. I appreciate that. So what can I do for you?
Well, my question is, I got a dialog box that says I have a Mac Mini that my Time Machine could not complete the backup.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Usually, it means it's the drive you're backing up to is full.
Oh, but I have actually 782 gigabytes, and I have a terabyte drive.
But remember, it keeps backing up older versions too, right?
Yeah.
So your backup can actually be bigger than your drive.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. You have a bigger backup drive than your internal drive, but it's keeping older versions. So I would just look and see what's free on the external drive. Can you do that?
Free on the external drive.
Yeah, see the drive that you're backing up to, see how much space there is. I would guess that it's run out of space.
It also says that it says in the dialog box that the files can't be copied onto the backup disk because it appears to be read-only.
Oh, well,
and you may need to repair or reformat the disk using this utility.
Yeah, that's exact. I have exactly the same error come up from time to time.
Okay.
And I am not sure. Maybe the chat room can help me with this one because I've seen that error many times on Time Machine. And I never really know what to do. I don't want to start all over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just check and see if the chat room has any idea why this would happen. I'm looking online, and I'm seeing a lot of people complaining of the problem.
I completed a successful Time Machine backup the day before Friday at 10 a.m., but I updated new software preferences from the software update, and it said something about Time Machine that it was going to improve it or something.
Yeah, so that might have been something else that was getting improved, not your particular problem.
God.
I would hope, and this can cause this. When you turn off your computer, you shut it down, right? You don't just turn it off, do you?
Well, I've been having monitor problems where I didn't have a monitor and I had to shut it down in order to install the new monitor on there so the Mac Mini might have recognized it. That might have been it, too.
Yeah, if you do a hard shutdown, that will cause this problem.
Ah, that would be it.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to look and see and keep listening to the show. And if I can find a solution that does not require starting over, I will get it to you. But I think their advice, which is to rebuild the backup. I know it takes a while for that first time. There's a couple of things you could do, at least try. One is repair permissions. You know about repairing permissions?
Yeah, I did that and it said everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, what happens is when you do a hard shutdown on the drive, like that. In other words, on a Mac, you're supposed to select shut down from the Apple menu and right. shut it down.
Yeah.
It can corrupt the table of contents on that backup. Or it could do it on your main drive, too. So it's really best not to do that if you can avoid it.
Yeah.
So,
probably just...
I would start over.
Yeah.
I would start over and then just be real careful to shut down.
Yeah. I'm always good, but that I had an unusual situation where...
Yeah, sometimes you have to. Yeah.
And there was no way I can view my Mac Mini, and I had to force it shut down.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens, exactly. But unfortunately, on a Mac, now a PC, you can often get away from that with that. But on a Macintosh, it can be very sensitive to that. You notice that Macs won't let you eject disks and or take out a disk unconnected unless you eject it first. Things like that. It wants to kind of finish up what it's doing with the disk before it ejects it. And the same thing, if you turn it off, you're not giving it a chance to eject. Most of the time, it's okay. But sometimes it's not.
So
you don't feel so bad, I did the same thing. And that's, you know, I have that same error. So try rebuilding it and just from now on try to shut down. And if it happens again, it happens again. There is another program I would recommend you look at that kind of works with Time Machine and won't have this problem. It's called Super Duper.
Uh-huh. It's you back up. I always have another backup in addition to Time Machine.
Oh, good. Yeah, Super Duper makes a bootable backup. It will work with Time Machine. It's not incompatible with Time Machine, and it's very handy to have. So good. So you're not at risk of losing data. That's the good news.
Okay. All righty.
Sorry, Denise. All right. It's funny that the Mac operating system seems to be more vulnerable to this. I don't think it actually is, but for some reason, PCs will just let you eject a USB. Just pull out a USB drive, and the Mac always wants you to eject it first. On PC, similarly, you can press the start the on off switch and let it shut down, or press the on off switch and hold it and shut it down, and it usually can survive that. Occasionally, though, you can have a problem doing that. So I guess it is a little bit of a design flaw with the file system, Macintosh file system. They want to unmount that disk before you disconnect it. Anybody has an idea for how she could fix it? Somebody said you run Disk Utility and repair the disk. I'm sure you tried that. Not repair permissions, but repair the disk. I'm sure you tried that. I think that you really have to rebuild it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a feature.
I will wait for you. And I will wait for you.
I love it that the banjo is making a comeback. Who is it? This isn't Mumford. Is this the Avett Brothers?
You got it, Mumford.
It is Mumford. Oh, I didn't recognize his singing voice. Just love it. These are hipsters are getting into the banjo. I love that. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We're kind of wondering. I'm questioning. Why is it that the Macintosh is so sensitive to not shutting down properly, whereas PCs don't seem to be? And some say, you know, it's the file system. Of course it is the file system. PCs use FAT file system or NTFS. The Macintosh uses an HFS file system. So they're different file systems. And one of the things a file system does to speed up things is cache writes. So when you write to a disk, instead of doing it in order as, you know, because that'll slow you down. You have to wait for the disk to write. It will let you go on. And it will cache up. It will accumulate a number of writes and then do them all at once. And it really makes a difference in disk speed. But it has a negative effect in one way, because if you cache writes and the disk gets disconnected or the computer gets suddenly turned off, the stuff that's not yet written will never get written. So that can be caused to data loss or worse. And because so much of the time a hard drive is writing, it's writing to the table of contents, the catalog, it can corrupt the catalog. The way the Macintosh and most Unix-based file systems handle this is they will say, oh, you know what, we're now in an unknown state. So we're going to make this disc read only. You still can read it, but you can't write to it until we check. And I think that this is what's happened to our last caller's disc. She shut the Mac Mini down because she had to, because the monitor wasn't working. She couldn't do a normalized shutdown. The operating system said, all right, the last time, you know, we were here, we suddenly got cut off in mid-write. And so the disc is in an unknown state. So I want you to do a file system check before we continue on. And most Unix-based operating systems will do this. You can do a low-level FSCK, but it's kind of complicated. You have to boot into a special mode and so forth. But if you're curious and you want to do it, if you just Google, you know, OS 10 FSCK, file system check, FSCK, you can find the commands. It'll get you in there. And that might fix it. It might say, oh, okay, I checked, everything's fine. I'm going to go back to read-write. I don't want to be read-only anymore. FSCK. I don't think Disk Utility will do this. I think you need to do it when the operating system's not fully booted. You have to do it from a special command prompt. There is also something called journaling, which is nice. And modern operating systems do journaling. You can also set up the Macintosh operating system to do journaling. And that makes it more robust. It keeps track of what it's written, what it hasn't written. If it suddenly shuts down, a journaled file system usually handles that better. But it is not on by default on the Macintosh operating system. So, Don, do you have a landline?
I'm here.
Hey, Don. Don from Los Angeles. So, first of all, are you on a landline now?
I am. I'm talking to you on an AT&T landline at my bricks-and-mortar business, and it's a Panasonic EasaPhone from the 1980s, actually.
And you know what? It sounds great.
Doesn't it? I mean, it's amazing. People forget how much sound quality we've lost.
Yeah, but,
But I love your show, Leo, and to me, you are the tech guy. You know, and as you said, you were singing at the very beginning, the tech guy. You're not a tech guy. You are.
I am the tech guy. Well, there's other tech guys. I'm not the only tech guy.
Prep guy, because I was a Boy Scout and I was in a lifeguard, and I run a bricks and mortars business. I manage a small theater, so you know, people come here, and we want to have every kind of like safety and security thing.
Yeah.
Live audiences.
You need 911.
Right.
So hang on, we're going to come back and I'm going to talk about it, because some solutions do, some don't, and then some have something called E911, which is not the same. So hang on. Leo Laporte, you can come in, Donnie. You don't have to stand out there. Come on in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We have an open studio. I love it. We got people come to visit. Come on in. Come on in. Oh, he's got to go to the bathroom. Well, that I can't help you with. That'll be $1.50, please. Thank you. Hey, I got to defray expenses. We were talking with Don. Now, Don has a business, so that's a different, and a business that's open to the public, right? So
right. You
certainly need 911.
Right. And incidentally, Leo, when the AT&T tech guy came here, who's a really, really terrific phone technician, he's been on the job for 20 years, and he said that AT&T is going to stop installing traditional landlines in the next few years, and it's part of a government plan. But you know, if the internet goes down, then a lot of these plans, like the Comcast one they were trying to upsell you, even that wouldn't work. So that's not even a landline.
That's exactly right. And we forget, but the Ma Bell, very early on, because it was so vital to national security and to safety, mm-hmm. and so forth, had some features put into it. I'm sure they were required by regulation to make sure that it is absolutely robust. And certainly the engineers in the early days of Ma Bell were very, very finicky about that. Remember, the phone company wouldn't let you put any equipment that they didn't approve on your phone line for a long time. It was only after the Carter decision, which broke up AT&T, that things started to change. So until the 70s, you know, Ma Bell was a highly regulated monopoly, and safety was paramount. So a few things with a landline that you just can't do with any of these VoIP services. A landline, for instance, does not go out when the power goes out. Now, if you only have cordless phones that require power, that's not going to help you. So you should always have, if you really want to be safe, you should have a Ma Bell landline. And by Ma Bell, I mean any of the Bell system companies, Verizon, AT&T, whatever. You have a Ma Bell landline, and you should have a phone that doesn't need to plug into the wall, just needs to plug into the phone jack, because it will get its power from the phone company, and it will work in a blackout.
Right.
So that's very important. Now, there are 911 systems designed for cell phones. It's called E911. It's required by the government. Many VoIP services, if you turn it on, will also support 911, but you make an excellent point. If the internet's down, those VoIP services do not work.
Okay.
And E911 has some other issues. It's a regional 911. And the reason this is because you can take a VoIP system with you. You know, if you have a Magic Jack, and you go to Canada, you plug it into the internet there, it still works. Call 911, they're going to respond in Los Angeles, and you're going to have a heart attack in Canada. So that's right. Not so good. So E911 is to get around that. It's for cells. Cells also support E911. You have to register your location for E911 to be useful. You have to say, I'm here. And if you go somewhere else, you should re-register it. Otherwise, you won't have 911. I think we've yet to see a disaster, but I think that there will be a disaster at some point where somebody will think they have a real 911 service and it won't work.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're right. You have a movie theater. You have the public in there.
Actually, it's a performance theater. It's a live performance.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
It's all like pre-technology, Leo.
Oh, you mean there's actually people on a stage?
Well, people on a stage. Yeah, exactly.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so, I mean, we had actually good surveillance by a security company for, like, you know, just because we're in an urban area. But, and that's, so we have good internet from AT&T, but it's a reminder for people to know that these a landline is a, you know, means something really specific from Ma Bell. Like
exactly. And if I, you know, I think of Aurora, Colorado and the disaster there. Yeah. And I think that when something like that happens, the theater manager, you have to have in your office or somewhere accessible to employees in case of an emergency, an unpowered, unplugged-in landline phone to an AT&T service. That's the only thing in a case of an emergency that you can really depend on.
Right. Or my folks in New York, Verizon, you know, they have good Verizon service, but the Time Warner cable guy said, oh, we'll give you a landline, and it'll be a triple play, it'll be a better deal. Now they don't have... No, their landline. They were, you know, kind of semi-elderly folks who are upsold into a triple play, but they lost a security feature. And I was mad when I heard this.
Yep. I think that's really you hit the nail on the head. Now they put battery backups, so they often still work when the power goes out, but they don't work when the internet goes out or the cable goes out, because that's how you're getting your service.
Well, thank you very much, Leo.
I'm glad you brought this up, Don, and I think you have a higher responsibility when you have the public in your place. You need to have a real 911 service. Now, a lot of people have cell phones, and I think nowadays people mostly use 911 via cell phone. And in most cases, that's going to be just fine because of the E911 services. They can locate you because they know where the cell phone is being used and so forth. But there's nothing like what they call POTS, plain old telephone landline service, when it comes to emergencies. I think that that's really important. And if you are going to opt for a cable company provided phone line, just understand it's different. It's not the same. And as Tech Whisperer points out, cell phones often are overwhelmed during a natural disaster. And that's absolutely true. If something horrible is happening in your area, a heart attack's one thing. But if you've just had an earthquake, for instance, and we're in earthquake country here, you can be sure that cell service will stop working. Either because the towers will have fallen, power will have gone out, to the towers, the backhauls will have gone out to the towers, or just overuse. These things are not that robust. A corded phone plugged into a landline, there's nothing like it. John in South Bend, Indiana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Do I sound okay? I'm on a corded headset here.
You sound better than on a phone.
I'm on a Galaxy S3 from T-Mobile, man. Thanks for your recommendation for buying this phone.
Nice phone, isn't it? You know, I've been using an iPhone 5 because I'm reviewing it, and so I'm forcing myself to use it. And despite the fact that it is the biggest iPhone screen yet, it's not nearly as big as a Galaxy S3, and I'm jonesing. I'm missing that giant screen.
Oh man, I'm sorry for you, man. I got a turned me on to your shows. Who has an iPhone 5? And I'm grateful because I've learned a lot from listening to this show and a lot of other shows you do.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad you like your phone. And you know, the good news is these are all great phones nowadays. You're not making a major sacrifice to buy any particular phone. But
I agree.
But once you start using big, phones are like purses. You ever notice a woman never goes to a smaller purse? They only go to bigger purses and bigger and bigger. You escalate. And phones are like that. You start getting a big screen, then you can never go to a smaller screen. You got to go to bigger and bigger. I can't wait till the Galaxy Note 2 comes out. That's a 5.5-inch screen.
If I had a choice, you know, it'd be hard to throw a debate on that. But now I wanted to ask you, you know, I noticed that that Google Wallet app.
Yeah.
I seen that out, but I don't see it in the Play Store and on my S3 here. And
It's carrier specific. Some carriers, I can't get it either on my S3 because AT&T doesn't support it. The carrier, if you go to the Play Store and search for Wallet, it will tell you, oh, can't get it on your phone.
So, yeah, I see that. I'm on T-Mobile.
Apparently T-Mobile hasn't supported it. Now, U.S. Cellular has support for Google Wallet. So there are some people with S3s that can use Google Wallet, but not everybody. And I don't understand why the carriers aren't supporting it. My suspicion is it's greed, that they want to control the wallet. When we come back, I want to talk about wallets, because that's the next big thing in mobile devices. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I need a phone to match my ego. Hey, before we go back to the calls, I want to talk a little bit about my friends at Citrix and a great product from them called GoToMeeting. You know all about GoToMeeting, I'm sure. I've talked about it so many times. I hope you know all about it. GoToMeeting lets you meet face-to-face wherever your team or your clients are located. And this is really the way to do meetings. You know, you've got screen sharing. They've had this for a long time. And that's nice because you're literally all on the same page. You're looking at that presentation together and you can see it. But now they've added this HD Faces, which is incredible. It means if your Mac or PC has a camera, a webcam, all it takes is a click and you can start a meeting and your clients or colleagues will be seeing you. If they have cameras on their PCs or Macs, you'll be seeing them. And even if they have iPads, now this is new and I love this, you can use an iPad to attend a GoToMeeting. And the camera on the iPad works, so does the microphone and the earbuds. You could be sitting in the backyard with your iPad at a meeting. This is, I just think it's so cool. And what's nice is the GoToMeeting apps for iPad and iPhone and Android are free. So you don't pay for those, which is really fantastic. I want you to, right now, visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the promo code TECH, just TECH. GoToMeeting.com, promo code TECH, and you could try this free for 30 days. Get the free app. You could actually attend a meeting on an iPhone, but for some reason they haven't yet added the camera. I bet they do soon. That's another nice thing about Citrix and GoToMeeting. When they add capabilities, you just get it automatically. GoToMeeting.com. Meet with friends, colleagues, clients all over the world. It's got built-in VoIP, also built-in real phone conferencing. All part of the price, $49 a month. That's it. For as many meetings as you want, as long as you want. Try it free right now for the next 30 days. GoToMeeting.com. Use the offer code TECH. And then join a meeting on your iPad. Cool. You have been born in Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Is it somebody's birthday today? We're talking about Google Wallet. Actually, Apple has something called Passbook, and I think there are going to be a lot of these applications that let you... Well, the idea of Google Wallet is you attach your credit card to it, and you can pay for things with it. Apple's Passbook does not yet have that feature. It's just a way to store club cards in it or airline tickets or movie tickets. But you've got to think that Apple's planning to put credit cards in there, because as soon as they do, They get to get a little piece of every transaction you make with that thing. And I think that this is the problem, is that the phone companies envision themselves being a player here. Because after all, when you buy ringtones, you can charge it to your phone company. In the old days, before Apple and Google came along, when you bought an application for your BlackBerry, you charged it through the phone company. You get a little chunk to the phone company. And I think the phone company sees that revenue source dwindling, going bye-bye, as Apple, using its market clout, has said, no, you're going to buy it from us, and we're going to make the money, not you, phone company. Google's trying to do the same thing. So I would guess that that's the reason that it's not automatic that Google Wallet works. Your carrier has to support it. Sprint does support it. But
that's a darn shame.
I know. You know, it's just a matter of time. The pressure is going to be on. Now, somebody in the chat room said that he has T-Mobile and he is able to use Google Wallet on his Nexus. So it sounds like it's I don't know. T-Mobile's saying okay on the Nexus, but not on the Galaxy S3.
You know, I heard on XDA, because I had rooted my phone and then I had taken it off and, you know, wiped it back. And I don't know if I want to do, you know, there was ways on their forums there to do it. You had to edit, you know, some files.
I agree with you. It always makes me nervous.
We're talking money here. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Let's not mess around with that. Now, see, I have, by the way, rooted my Galaxy S3, and I'm running Cyanogen Mod 10, which gives me the latest Jelly Bean Android, and I love it, and it's been very good, and I've been very happy with it. But when I go to Google Play Store, your device isn't compatible with this version on the Google Wallet, so it won't let me install it, even though it's rooted.
Yeah, well, have you had any problems with that? I had rooted it, but I never flashed anything, so...
Once you root it, then all you have to do is install something called Clockwork Mod. It's in the Play Store, and it makes it very, very easy to choose from a variety of custom ROMs. This is, folks, this is a way of, this is one of the things I love about Android, a way of saying, I'm gonna not run the default operating system that came with my Galaxy S3 because I don't like what Samsung does with it, or because I want more capability, or because I want the latest version of Android. It's a very trivial thing once you root it. Rooting's the hard part. That's giving you super user permission. Once you have that permission, then you just install this simple app. And now I can download ROMs from a lot of different sources, press a button, and it installs them. It makes it very, very easy. Automatically updates when the new version comes out. I'm using the Cyanogen Mod CM10 dailies, or nightlies, I guess they call them, not the stable release. And I haven't had any problems. Some people have been complaining about maybe some Wi-Fi issues or camera issues, but this has been very very responsive. In fact, you may remember a caller called me a couple of weeks ago saying he was having trouble with his S3 and Wi-Fi, and I'd had somewhat of the same thing. This fixed that problem, made the Wi-Fi much more reliable. So I wouldn't hesitate to recommend it.
The only downfall for me is when I'm at home. I'm a truck driver. I'm actually on the road right now. And when I'm at home, I live in a basement, and T-Mobile provides that Wi-Fi calling. That's the only...
You can't give that up. Yeah. Yeah. You got to be careful, because the carriers don't necessarily support everything that happens on a rooted phone. You're right.
Yeah. That was my only thing shooing me away from doing that, yeah. Leo.
I tell you, I love Jelly Bean so much. That's the latest version of Android. And I understand it's coming soon for the Galaxy S3. It's people in Poland already have it, so it can only be a matter of time for the rest of the world.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Heard.
So at some point in the next week or two, you'll probably get an update to Jelly Bean. That's a good reason, in my opinion, to root it, just because I love Jelly Bean. But since we're going to get it soon, you know, Google Now, which is part of Jelly Bean, is just the coolest little app.
I have a Zoom.
Well, there you go. And you rooted your Zoom, obviously, because that's...
Yeah.
And anybody who has a Nexus 7 from Google or a Nexus from Google, those have been updated to Jelly Bean. It really is a... I think they finally got Android really good. It's responsive. It's fast. It's got nice features. I think they've done a nice job for it. I like Android because I can root the phones. Android... And Google say, hey, go ahead and root it. They like the idea of you rooting it. Sometimes the carriers discourage it, or the manufacturers of the handsets. But in general, it's accepted and it's okay, and it's certainly not illegal to root your phone. And sometimes you get some nice benefits. without giving up the features and security. It's for hackers. All right, let's admit it. It's for people who like to mess with their stuff, but it's fun. And it still didn't give me Google Wallet, and I'm not sure why that is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, to Adelaide, Australia we go. Hi, Sam.
G'day, Leo.
How are you today?
I'm doing just great, thank you, Leo.
It's so nice to talk to you. I'm going to be in Australia next month this time. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, great. Leo, I've got 20 or 30 old Sony Hi8 tapes, two-hour tapes, that I want to convert to digital. And over a few years, I've tried various different methods. The first one that works without dropping frames is the Grass Valley Canopus.
Yeah, I love the Canopus. We've used the Canopus 110 80 VC 110 for many years, and it's been very, very robust. Yeah. It's expensive, but it does a great job.
Yeah, well, I've got the 80 VC 110, and my camcorder is NTSC, so that's not an issue. What happens, it converts it without dropping frames, but across the bottom of the resulting window, I get this blurry, distorted band.
Yeah, it looks like it's moving, right? It looks like little ants, and it's going up and down and weird stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of along the lines of what the Aero interface looks like on Windows 7. If
yeah,
you overlap
yeah.
the top or bottom of the screen.
I think that's a PAL to NTSC thing, because PAL, you know, is a different screen resolution.
No, this has nothing to do with PAL, Leo. Everything I have is NTSC.
Oh, it's all NTSC. Okay.
Yes.
Well, it may be then an issue of overscan. Have you ever heard that phrase before?
No, I have not.
This comes up a lot in video. It's the extra image area around the video image. It's not normally seen on most TVs. It's because TV sets in the 30s, and I guess up until they got rid of cathode ray tubes, were inconsistent in how much of the screen you saw. The actual display area, the manufacturing tolerances were so loose on CRTs, the actual display area would vary due to power supply issues, screen issues, DC regulation, on and on and on. So there's extra area on the screen that is not normally seen, and they don't bother putting real data there. And I suspect that's what you're seeing. I'll talk about how to fix it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theaters, anything with a chip in it. We've been talking with Sam from Australia. He's in Adelaide via Skype. And the delay aside, I have to say, one of the nice things about Skype, it sounds better than a phone call. It actually has more audio bandwidth. When they first designed the landline phone system back in the 20s, they made it made the sound be less than 8-bit, I think 6-bit sound, because they weren't sure about the carrying capacity of the copper. And we've never changed it. They carefully did a lot of tests about what frequencies are needed to make human speech intelligible at the smallest possible use of bandwidth, and that's what they've set on, and now all phones still sound just as bad, even though, of course, the carrying capacity is probably a lot better. Well, Skype said, well, wait a minute. We're digital. We're going over internet. We could use higher quality, and that's why you can hear the full resonance of Sam's voice when he speaks to us. It sounds good. So Sam has a little problem. In fact, I don't know if you were watching the video, but we had a an image from the AVS forums of what I think you're getting, which is just, you described it as like the Aero blur on Windows. It's just a little bit of blurred video on the screen. And that is, I'll give you, the chat room and I have been just chatting about this. If you could turn on auto cropping on your 80VC, I think that would eliminate it. The best solution on high eight, according to Magpie, is it's a heads. What you're seeing is head switching. So, or tape path skew or tracking mismatch. He says the best solution is just to crop it. You just want to cut off that bottom point. That's just extra stuff that would not normally be seen in an underscanned monitor, but because our computer monitors overscan, they show more of the screen than would normally be shown, you see that stuff.
Leo, each 2-hour tape produces a file with an AVI suffix approaching 30 gigabytes, so that's and I'm presuming I can edit that down later.
Yeah.
But I guess you've just answered one of my questions. Is the will a video editing program actually, does it have the capability of just cutting off that bottom portion, cropping it?
Some do. Some you can specify the screen size, and it will just trim it. And QuickTime Pro will do that, I believe, as well. So you can always go out and buy QuickTime Pro from Apple. It's $30, and that will also do it.
Okay. On Windows. So,
yeah, unless they've stopped. They used to offer QuickTime Pro for Windows as well. Yeah, Studio 15 will do it. I bet you Adobe Premiere Elements would do it as well. It's not the what you're seeing is really common. I've seen it. I think anybody who's spent any time with digitized video has seen it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I know Adobe Premiere Elements you've mentioned before, so maybe
excellent.
That's
yeah, it's my favorite inexpensive video editor. Now, the other thing is, of course, you probably wouldn't see this if you were digitizing from your camcorder, the original recording device.
Now, I am.
That is
what I'm using, Leon.
Okay.
In fact, I want to get it done before the while the camcorder's
I know, my Hi-8 camcorder is dead. So I have a lot of Hi-8 tapes and no camcorder.
Died, and that's why I'm anxious to get the job done.
Yeah. I think that I would first look at the ADVC and see if there's an auto crop feature, because that should take care of it. If not, most video editing software could. You're right, that size is way too big. There's not enough data there to justify 30 gigs. So what you'll do when you use the editor as well is you'll recompress it to H.264 that'll give you the same quality and shouldn't give you a file size larger than a gigabyte an hour.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was always assuming that would be the case.
Oh, yeah, you don't have to worry. That's massive files. Now, here's something.
I mean, in this day and age, 30 gigabytes times 20 is still well within the range.
Sure, you could fit that on a 2-terabyte drive, but you don't want to store it there forever. Here's one from Magpie in our chat room. He said, and this sounds like it must be an Australian program, Womble MPEG DVD Wizard. I don't know why Womble sounds like an Australian word. Maybe because of wombats. I don't know. Womble MPEG DVD Wizard allows full adjust and resize for all four borders independently. So you can just say, nudge up that bottom border 5 pixels, and it'll do it.
Hey, that sounds ideal, Leo. Thank you for that one. Well, thank you to the chat room.
They're smart.
I sure are. Okay, Leo, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam. Great to talk to you. Doesn't that sound great? We're actually getting better sound quality from Australia than we do from somebody down the street. I love Skype. Great to talk to you. Thank you for listening in Australia. That's wonderful. And I'll be down under. I'll be in Sydney on November 6th, Brisbane November 8th. We're going down there for a Mac Mania cruise. We're going to go out to New Caledonia, the Great Barrier Reef. We'll see the total eclipse of the sun. Can't wait. I will be gone those weekends, but there's good news. 17th and 18th of November, Scott Wilkinson will be filling in. We're doing home theater. And I'm recording special material for the week I'll be gone, the other weekend I'll be gone. In fact, right after the show ends, I'll be recording a little bit extra. So if this is, you know, it's hard to get through on the show, I know. I will continue on for another hour after we wrap it up in about 45 minutes. So keep those phone calls coming. 8888, ask Leo. Wombles does sound like an Australian word. I don't know why. It's a womble, mate. Put another womble on the barbie. Travis in Pullman, Washington. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Travis.
Hey, Leo. Nice to talk to you once again. I missed the Twit Brick House.
Oh, you got to come back and visit. Yeah, yeah. We're pretty proud of our studio here.
I love watching it on my new Roku.
But, yes, awesome.
Yeah, picked that one up for about $45 after your guys' show on Know How there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's been great. Worked out for me great.
They got a new one. I'm very excited. They have, it's called the Roku Stick. Roku basically adds internet access to your television. And the Roku Stick is designed to fit into an HDMI port. Looks like a USB thumb drive. And add Roku capabilities to your TV just via plugging it into the TV's MHL HDMI port, which I think is very cool.
Now, I'm having a unique issue here. We have a Netgear router, and it's a 2.5 gigahertz, and our neighbors have a Netgear router that's a 5 gigahertz. And for some odd reason, on my Mac and on my iPhone, but not my Roku device, when I try to log into the Wi-Fi with my password, sometimes it accepts it, other times it doesn't, and if I keep on hitting enter over and over and over again with the same password unchanged, it'll eventually accept it. And then sometimes it'll just kick me off. So I'm not quite sure what I can do, but I haven't had this problem until I started seeing that Netgear router show up.
Yeah, well, okay, so this is something that I have happened to me a lot, too, now. And I suspect it's just because the band is so crowded. You say that you're starting to see other routers, and that's exactly why. In fact, if I try this yourself. If you live in a metropolitan area, or at least an area where there's some people, just look and see what Wi-Fi's out there, and you'll be amazed. There's sometimes 20 or 30 access points, all visible. Now, Wi-Fi has two frequencies and 11 bands. Let me talk about this. So the two frequencies that are available to Wi-Fi routers these days are the old 2.4 gigahertz and the newer 5 gigahertz. And then each of those has 11 bands within it. And I'll talk about how you can choose a band that'll be less complicated, less crowded when we come back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Not a womble. Remember you're a womble. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking with Travis in Pullman, Washington, who's having trouble getting on his Wi-Fi. He says, my neighbor's Wi-Fi is all of a sudden kicking me off. It doesn't have the same name as your router, does it?
Theirs is Netgear G5, and ours is just Netgear.
All right. I would change the name of your router. It's called the SSID. You can change it to anything you want. It may be that it's ignoring the G5, and it's just seeing Netgear. So what happens, though, because the networks are, the bandwidth is so crowded now, and there are Wi-Fi analyzers. You can download a Wi-Fi analyzer for your any Wi-Fi-enabled device, including a smartphone. And what will happen is if you look at it and get one that shows you a kind of running graph. Most of these are free. And you'll see how busy it is. You've got 11 channels, but really effectively there's only three. There's, I think it's, I can't remember what they are, 1, 3, 9, maybe there's 4 and 11. And what happens is these are the main channels, 3 or 4 of them, and then the side channels are also used. So that's why you'll see when you look at your Wi-Fi analyzer, humps where the main channels are. You want to pick a hump that doesn't have much going on there. That will give you less of this interference. And what happens with interference is, first of all, Wi-Fi devices are often somewhat promiscuous. They look for the best signal. And so it's 1, 6, and 11. Thank you. And if you're in the UK, you get an extra couple. You get 13. So 1, 6, and 11. Those are the actual channels. They say you have 11 channels. You really have 3, 1, 6, and 11 with some extra on the side. So pick one that's less active. Or if you have the 5 gigahertz capability, more and more I'm seeing people use that. Now, there are disadvantages. But many of more modern routers have, or they call them dual band routers, can do 5 gigahertz. And the advantage of that is it's not so crowded yet. Not so crowded yet. Now, of course, if your neighbor's router is Netgear 5G, they may actually be on the 5 gigahertz band.
Right.
In which case you'd want to be on the... Are you on the 5 gigahertz band?
I think I'm on the 2.4, but I'm not sure.
Well, if they have a 5G Netgear and they're using... See, Netgear, if it says Netgear-5G, that really means that their router's named Netgear and they're using the 5 gigahertz band. Or you may be seeing... Actually, here's the thing. They have that turned on. Doesn't mean they're using it. So you may be seeing it. They may also have 2.4, and they may be using that one. I would rename your SSID. You know, call it Travis's Netgear. And that may fix it, because it may be your router says, oh, I see Netgear, and tries to join it.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to change it, because it's just...
And then the other thing you could do is get a Wi-Fi analyzer and look at how crowded it is.
Yeah. Do you have a suggestion for which Wi-Fi analyzer should
Use? Well, I use one on Android. Do you have a smartphone?
Yeah.
The one I use on Android is, and as I've liked it a lot, is called Wi-E. Are there any other... the chat room will have some good choices. Give me a Windows choice. InSIDDER. That's a good one. I've used that one before. InSitter for Windows. That's from metageek.net. iOS. Let's see. Anybody for iOS? I wonder if I have one on my iOS. I probably
anybody
do.
Bueller?
Bueller? Let me look at my iPhone and see if I've got one installed. I do not, but I'm sure there's some good choices. I'll look and see if I can find one for you. But the point is, these are great. You should definitely put one on your Wi-Fi, on your on smartphone if it has Wi-Fi, because then you have in your pocket a Wi-Fi analyzer, and you'll be amazed. You will be amazed at how much junk there is in the airwaves. It's amazing this thing works. Fing!
Yeah, I go to WSU, and so there's tons of Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah. Well, any university is going to be jammed. Fing for iOS, F-I-N-G, the chat room's telling me. I'm going to download it right now.
Fing?
Fing, like thing with an F.
Oh, okay, Fing.
Fing. I got that Fing that finds the Wi-Fi. It's a Wi-Fi finding thing. You know, even if you never use, you know, need this, it's really fun, or I guess it's F-N-G, there's no I. It's really handy. Is that it? No, I don't think that's it. Fin? Did you mistype it? I'm trying to find. The chat room's telling me Fing, but I don't see anything called Fing. So we'll keep looking. It may be Apple doesn't want you to have these. I don't know.
Probably not.
Yeah. We don't want you to be looking at your Wi-Fi. Maybe they're banned. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Now, Leo, I got a quick question for you.
Sure.
To maybe send you a mug, a WSU mug.
I would love one, because as you know, I have a Clemson mug here. I have a mug from The Ohio State University, but I don't have a... I need a... Is it the Huskies? I'm
seeing that one.
I need the Huskies mug.
No. Don't get the Huskies mug. No.
Oh, not the Huskies mug. What is WSU?
Washington State with the Cougars.
Cougars? What am I thinking? I need a Cougars mug. What did I say? Huskies? What? Silly me.
Oh, man.
Send it along. I'd love to get it. Box,
all right,
P.O. Box 1018, Petaluma, California, 94953. And if you need a street address, just email me and I'll send you the street address.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you so much. Great to talk to you. You know, see, now they're sending me a link to an iTunes app called Fing. The Fing network scanner, but I didn't see that when I let me click this link. I didn't see that when I searched on my iPhone. The Fing network scanner, designed for iPhone and iPad. This looks good. This looks good. Enjoy your network. Fing, the ultimate tool for network scan and analysis, is now available for iPhone, iPad, and iPad Touch. I got to tell you, these are really handy to have because. And it's only going to get worse. Wi-Fi problems are universal. What this doesn't look like it does, and that's I'd like to see real-time graphing, because that's what you want to do. Yeah, you want to see what's going on over time. But it is very handy to be able to scan the Wi-Fi and see where it's crowded and maybe customize your Wi-Fi. Travis, I would suggest your wife. You change the name from your neighbor's Wi-Fi to something else. If they have the same name, that's going to be a problem. Mel in Temecula, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mel.
Hello. Hello, Leo.
Hello, Mel.
I always listen to you whenever I'm on the road every Saturday. It's my first time to call.
Well, it's about time. Welcome.
Yes, I have a question. I have a daughter who's in high school.
Yes.
And whenever she does her homework on the computer, she's always on Facebook.
I was just talking about how my daughter would do the same thing. She'd have Instant Messenger. She'd have the TV on. She'd have music going and doing homework. I will tell you how you can limit her Facebook use, how you can say only at certain times, because this is what I ended up doing when we continue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Meanwhile, I want to tell you about how to get rid of your iPhone. Your old iPhone. So you can get a new iPhone. That's what I want to tell you from Gazelle.com. Gazelle's the place to send all your old eye gear, get some cash, and buy the new eye gear. Or a new Mac or a new iPod. They'll take Blackberries, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung smartphones. Let's just see. If I wanted to trade in my AT&T... Samsung Galaxy Note. I have one of those. I wonder how much that's worth. It's in good condition. I have. It's free of water damage. I have all of this. Oh, look at that! I get $182. Let me throw that in the box. I had no idea. That's fantastic. Because I want to get that new Note too. Or maybe you've got an iPhone 4S. And you say, hey, I really want to get the iPhone 5. Let's get an offer. $216. Throw it in the box. So here's what I want you to do. Go to Gazelle and get a quote. These are good for 30 days, by the way. And, of course, my note was factory unlocked. I should have chosen that. That makes it more valuable. Oh, this is what I have. My Galaxy S3 factory unlocked. I'm sorry. I'm getting distracted. Trade that because I want to pay. I could trade those both in, and that's the note right there. Sorry, here's the deal. Go right now to gazelle.com. Their data experts will wipe the data off so you don't have to worry about that. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck, and then they will send you cash, check, PayPal, or Amazon gift card. If you get the Amazon gift card, just a little pro tip, an extra 5% on the value. Get your quote right now from gazelle.com. You got 30 days to take advantage of it. And the reason to do that right now is these things are not gaining in value. Got bad news for you. Got the old Nano? Want the new Nano? I want the new Nano. Get an offer on your old Nano? Good. You get the idea. Gazelle.com. Mel is in Temecula. His daughter is a teenager, and like all teenagers these days, she can't get off the Facebook even for homework. Now, you don't want to block her from Facebook entirely, or do you?
No.
Yeah, because that would be like taking a phone away from a teenage girl in my era. It would be cruel and unusual punishment. This is how they stay in touch with their friends. You just don't want her to use it when it's time for homework. Right?
That's correct.
So the way I used to do this, and there are different ways to do it, but the way I used to do it is with something called OpenDNS. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Free service, opendns.com. They have a paid version that gives you some more features that's designed specifically for parental controls. That's $20 a year. That's not bad. But what you can do is set up parental controls through your router. So she doesn't even know that you've done this. This used to drive my kids crazy. They'd go to Facebook between the hours of 7 and 10 at night. And it would say, "So I had actually had a picture of our family on it." And it would come up and say, "Sorry, your dad doesn't want you using Facebook during homework hours." And I, you know, when I turned it on, I told my wife, "Wait for it. Wait for it." And then we heard this blood-curdling scream from upstairs. Very satisfying moment. It gives you web filtering, a variety of web filtering, even by time, and that's what you really want. And because it's doing it at the router, it actually changes your DNS. It's very difficult for them to get around it. Unless they're smart enough to change the DNS on the computer. And you can prevent that, too, by locking down the computer, you know, by making it so she can't change her DNS. I really like this service. You get the free service, which is pretty customizable, and then for more bells and whistles for $20 a year. And then they also have the what they call the Family Shield, which is pre-configured, and that's also free. I really think this is good. A lot of schools, businesses use OpenDNS. OpenDNS.com, if you want to know more about that. And then many routers will have this capability. I had an Apple Airport Extreme. I could do this on that as well. And it had time schedules. It could say, and I actually would turn off the internet. That was another fun one. I'd turn off the internet at 11 p.m. because they would stay up all night. You know, I couldn't get them to go to bed. So I'd turn off the router at 11 p.m. And boom, good night. Now, somebody in the chat room is pointing out, and I think this is true, if your kid has a smartphone, then they can get on Facebook that way. But that's okay. I mean, you just want to make it a little harder. You don't necessarily need to block every route, every avenue. They could also go next door, you know. I mean, there's always ways. But you just want to make it so she's sitting on her computer. It just says, hey, remember we said we were, and do have this conversation ahead of time. We said we weren't going to use Facebook during homework. Remember that? Okay, Mel?
All right. Thank you.
I think this is great. We've talked before. I don't like the idea of spying on your teenagers, of getting their passwords and looking at what they're doing. I'm not saying that, but I do think that it's not at all inappropriate. It's completely appropriate to limit internet access. And, you know, many routers will do this. The Apple router does this where you say you only get 2 hours a night, or you can't use it after bedtime, or you can't use it during the homework hours, or you can't go on certain sites during homework hours. All of those things I think are appropriate. They just help the kid. But I don't think you should block Facebook. You know, the school that my kids, my youngest still goes to, my daughter went to the high school, they do have an internet access. They have Wi-Fi. But they do block Facebook during school hours. They block YouTube during school hours. And I have kind of mixed feelings about that, because I think one of the things a high schooler also needs to learn is, because, you know, when they go out in life, Facebook is not going to be blocked. YouTube is not going to be blocked. And they need to learn how to manage themselves, right? You can give them a little hand, but which is not a bad idea, but they need to learn how to get work done, even with Facebook beckoning, because it's not going to stop beckoning. And when they go out in the real world, it's going to beckon all the time. And it's not just Facebook. There's plenty of other distractions on the internet. I do know novelists who take solitaire off their computer because they find it's just the easiest way not to write. So it's not a bad thing to take these things off your computer. And they know, you know, I could always go to a solitaire website. They know that. But it just is just a little help. That's all. Just a little help. Yeah, I disagree with them blocking YouTube. Beatmaster in our chat room says Facebook might make sense, but YouTube has teaching videos on it. I agree. In fact, my son has learned more about string theory in the last 3 days via YouTube than a semester's worth of physics. He says, why don't they teach us this stuff? It's fascinating. There you go. Rob in Orange County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in a hamburger joint. Let me walk outside for a second.
All right. Which one?
McDonald's.
Oh, come on.
Little kids.
Come on. Oh, little kids. They want those Happy Meals. I know. You can't.
Exactly. Yeah. It cost me $17 for a meal just because of the Happy Meal.
Cheap toys for a 30-cent toy.
For a 30-cent toy, it cost me $17. Now my little kid's going to come outside and say, Dad, I need something.
Wait till they're old enough for In-N-Out. My son won't eat anywhere but In-N-Out now.
You know what? I used to love In-N-Out.
Sure.
But, you know, one time I went there, and I got sick afterwards, and since then I haven't liked their burgers.
That'll cure you.
Yeah, that did.
That'll cure you.
But my kids love McDonald's. Hey, I'm self-employed.
Okay.
Own a business. Started a business a few years ago. And I use a telephone system called UMA.
Yes.
I've never heard you talk about it. I love it. It integrates very well with Google Voice. I can call up throughout the United States and Canada. It costs me basically $3.70 just for the taxes.
I think UMA's great. In fact, we did a know-how episode recently with Ayaz Akhtar, who's an UMA customer, and he showed us how to use UMA. He has an UMA box. I do like UMA. My concern about UMA was, initially when they came out, you had to buy a lifetime subscription. And my question was, hey, this is a brand new company. It's a great idea, but what if they go out of business in 3 months and you have a lifetime subscription? You're kind of out of luck. Well, they've been around now for quite a few years. They have other plans and so forth. The UMA system is clever because it's essentially a peer-to-peer system, and so it gives you very good, very high quality, in my opinion, voice over the internet. You'll use your high-speed internet. You do have to buy an UMA box. Did you buy it when it first came out? Did you buy the lifetime UMA?
I bought it about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. It was $150 maybe or $200. I got the most recent one, which is the UMA Telo.
Yep.
And I love it. It's great. It's fantastic. I recommend it
to
everybody.
Do you pay a monthly fee or is it a one-time only cost?
You pay up front. I think it's about $200 now, maybe $250. I don't remember. You pay that once, and then you have to pay the communication taxes.
Yeah, that's so that you get E911, for instance. Those are taxes levied by the government to support 911.
It's $3.70 a month for that.
Yep.
Otherwise, I personally pay to get some extra benefit, $120 a year. I get free calls throughout the United States and Canada. I do have to do a little international calling for here and there, but it's really cheap. I buy $10, lasts me for a long time for international calls.
I think this is a great solution. There are quite a few ways to do this now. I was an early VoIP user with Vonage, and they've really been superseded by companies like MagicJack and UMA. And
yep.
I think UMA is probably the best quality. Are you on an UMA phone right now, Rob?
You're at McDonald's.
They don't have UMA there. Hey, thank you for the tip, Rob. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. By the way, the Gizwiz coming up, our gadget guru in just a bit, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That yields us the result that makes our hearts sing.
All right, Leo, nod 32.
That's beautiful. Of course, we're commemorating the one-year anniversary yesterday of the passing of Steve Jobs. I think no matter what your opinion is about Apple, you cannot deny that Steve Jobs was a vibrant, exciting force in the technology community. And now that we've been with Adam for a year, he is really missed. He made it more interesting. He did. He can combine liberal arts, humanities with technology to create amazing products. And he is absolutely missed, far too young. And I say that because he was the same age as me when he passed away.
Oh. the second you pass away, I'm going to say great things about you.
I hope you will mention me at least once in a while. Hey, remember that guy we used to do the show? What was the name of that?
Oh, no. I will say Leo Laporte. What a... he thought he was something. But this is, he'll be dead. What will you care?
Well, it's true. At that point, I don't really mind. That voice, that magical voice appearing out of the ether is Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for, what is it, 50 years now?
50 years in April since the first thing they bought from me.
But you were 16. You were just a
kid. Yeah. I was actually awesome. I was mailing from my crib.
He was just a child. Right. The guy's been writing since he was a teenager for Mad Magazine, and amazingly enough, has been in every issue of Mad Magazine for almost all that time.
Yes, sir.
Incredible. He also happens to be a complete gadget nerd. That's why we call him the Gizwiz and why he joins us every week to talk about his favorite new gadgets. Dick, what do you got today?
I got something for adults and kids. The adults will like it because it'll keep their kids organized and busy. It's called StoryBots, and you will know the two guys who are behind StoryBots. It's Greg and Evan Spiridellis, and they started Jib Jab.
Oh, who could forget Jib Jab?
Yeah, we're on the internet in Jib Jabs. As a matter of fact, they told me, I believe it was 250 million people have their face registered with Jib Jab.
Really?
So they thought, you know, we started Jib Jab 13 years ago. We should be doing something new. Both of the brothers have kids. They have 5 kids between them, ages 2 to 6. And they thought, let's use the Jib Jab technology to make learning fun for kids and keep the kids entertained. And they came up with a thing, and it's called StoryBots. So there are little videos. You go online. Several of them are free. You go online, upload your child's photo. They have the little StoryBot characters. And then kids can learn the alphabet. They're coming out with books that will be, I think the books are $3.99. It'll have your kid's face, use your kid's name. There are 26 little one-minute animations about the alphabet. For those just listening, Leo is currently recording a hideous-looking face to make his own.
It's fun.
Bot.
You can really have fun with this.
Yeah. And as I said, there are 4 trial videos that you can just download and see what it's like for free. So it's pretty neat. Things will start at $1.99. There's a lot of free stuff on the website. And then there are books for $3.99 and lots of different things. And I think it was Greg told me that they're doing some 20-minute projects. He said because that's about the time it takes for him to shower and shave. So he figured we got to do 20-minute things for parents who want to do a little chore around the house. And he said the advantage, Dick, of kids, repetition is nothing for them.
They don't mind seeing the same stupid show
over and over.
And I know how that is. Yeah. And, of course, it drives parents crazy. So, all right.
Well, that's why it's great if the kid is involved enough that he can watch it on his own. Then you can run off and take a shower he can entertain himself and be and learn something.
But
too.
You do have
Let
to
him like this show.
And because of the Child Online Protection Act, an adult does have to sign the child up. So you'll need to, create this with your child. But then once you create it, so here I'm going to do one. I did a picture of me, and I'm going to do it. It's me jumping on a bed. So let me just see because I put my picture in there. okay.
So that's how fast and easy it is.
Yeah, I was actually doing this while you were talking.
Yeah, and there you are.
No more storybots jumping on the bed. So it's fun. Your kid will like it because his face is in it or her face is in it. And you're saying they watch this over and over.
Yeah.
This won't be annoying at all.
No more storybots jumping on the bed.
Well,
now, this is the free version I'm doing here. There's a paid version for this, or how does that work?
Well, you know, the little videos are free, but then if you want to buy a book, or you want to do something more involved, the book start at $3.99, I believe.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a good way. It's a fun thing, educational and whimsical.
Yeah. And if Big Bird gets canceled, at least this still is here.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Needs no government support.
needs no government intervention. Actually, might need some government intervention. All right, Dickie D, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Stick around. We'll do the Giz Fizz. Actually, about an hour, because I'm going to do a taping for... we're going to keep answering calls for the next hour
as
we get ready for my trip to Australia. But after that, Dick comes back. He does something he calls the Giz Fizz, interviews members of the chat room. And makes a complete fool of himself, as he does every week. We'll be back on Tuesday with our regular Gizwiz show, where we feature products. I also do a bit that I like called Junk I Bought on SkyMall.
Oh, that is one of the best things in the show.
You ever see the SkyMall catalog in the airplane? It's just stuff you just go, how could this be? So I have, in fact, I've already got some stuff in the house. I've got the touchless toilet seat that raises itself in welcome. When you enter the commode, I have the tie-dyed union suit that I'm going to wear to go along with my peephole camera, which also has arrived. So I have a broad variety of things to show off on Tuesday on the Gizwiz. So thank you, Dick.
Excellent. It's like PBS for the internet.
It is. It's high quality, high toned content.
Pretty boring stuff. BBS. No, it's fun.
Thank you, Dickie D. Time for a couple more calls before the break. Then I will, as I said, continue to take calls for the next hour. So keep the calls coming in. 8888-ASK. Leo, Dave is in Chicago. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Well, I was listening to caller a couple callers ago talking about Uma and Magic Jack, and because I was going to ask you about Google Voicemail to try to eliminate my home phone.
Well, that's what I do, and that's when I use that OBI device. It's OBIHAI, $40 device. The Google Voice account is free. I love Google Voice. It's not Google Voice is kind of weird. It's not exactly VoIP. I guess it is when you use the OBI device. You're using your bandwidth. But when you use Google Voice on a cell phone, it actually calls you back.
Yeah, I was kind of reading about it while I was waiting. And
I love it. You know what? It's free. Get an account. Use it. I wouldn't abandon your landline right away, but use it for a while and see, because it's what I use all the time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.